said, avoiding Aijana's question, her accusation, about coming to Pasha's defense.
Besides, if you call Pasha a bastard, then I am too. The bastard product of the Tsar and his murderer.
Aijana cackled. If the birds in the steppe dream had been real, they would have startled from the grass.
Call yourself what you want, but that still makes you first in line for the throne. You are older than the Cesarevich by a year, and you are a direct descendant of the Tsar.
Right. And Russia wants a walking shadow for their leader.
Russia wants revolution, Nikolai. They don't want the old ways, and they don't want the Cesarevich, who is merely his sister's puppet. Listen to me. All you need to do is kill a few people, and you'll have the energy you need to be whole again, and more. You could make yourself indestructible, and with your magic, no one could stop you.
Nikolai spat in the grass.
When I figure out how to make myself whole again, it will have nothing to do with killing innocent visitors to this dream.
Aijana shrugged.
Your misguided sense of honor holds you back. But remember this. The crown can be powerful, yet as fragile as paper. Right now, Pasha is only a boy playing at becoming Tsar. You could take advantage of that, my son.
And with that, she bit on her arm to force her body awake, and she vanished violently from the dream. Nikolai shuddered. Then he pressed on through the grass toward the mountainside. But he couldn't shake the black stickiness that lingered in the air, like humidity of the foulest kind. Unfortunately, Aijana always left an impression. Chapter 7 Vika waited just outside the door of Madame Boulanger, a snooty French bakery on Nevsky Prospect, the main boulevard through St. Petersburg. She was there to intercept Renata, a servant in the house where Nikolai had formerly lived, because Renata could read tea leaves and might be able to see what was happening with Nikolai. But Renata thought Nikolai was dead, and Vika couldn't simply appear at the Zakrevsky house and talk openly about what had happened in the game, for other servants might hear. Not to mention that Galina Zakrevskaya, Nikolai's mentor and the tyrant of the house, hated Vika. So here Vika was, hovering by Madame Boulanger, where Renata was inside, picking up Galina's daily order of baguettes and pain au chocolat. Funny, in a way, that Galina was like her brother in that sense. Sergei had also had a standing order at a bakery for bread every day, although father's preference had always been hearty, practical Russian fare, not extravagant French confections. While Vika waited, she watched the people around her scurrying up and down Nevsky Prospect with brown paper parcels full of Christmas cakes and boxes with new suits and hats for holiday fetes. She wondered for a moment what ordinary life would feel like, the kind where days were filled with mundane concerns, like what color ribbon to wear in her hair for Christmas night. But Vika did not want an ordinary life. Finally, the bell above the door to Madame Boulanger tinkled, and Renata hurried out with an armful of baguettes wrapped in old Parisian newspaper, and a box presumably full of sweets. She stopped short and nearly dropped the bread when she saw Vika waiting. Vika shot a quick charm to keep the baguettes cradled in the crook of Renata's arms.
Privyet, Renata.
Renata clutched the bread tightly again. Too tightly, in fact. The crust of the bread crackled under her hold.
Zdrastoite,
she said, returning the greeting but using the formal form of hello. Renata looked mostly the same. A grey dress with a white apron, and intricately woven braids swaying against the nape of her neck. but there was no spark left in her eyes. Even near the end of the game, Renata had been a candle flame of bravery. She'd leaned against the bars of the cell in which she was trapped and wished Vika well. No trace of that courage remained. Nor was Renata's telltale kindness present. She merely looked at Vika blankly.
How can I assist you, Baroness Andreeva?
It was the same way Vika acted toward Pasha. Detached, reluctantly dutiful, using her official title, not her name.
I need to talk to you. Can you spare a few minutes? I don't think I have a choice.
She looked at the snow at her feet. Vika gritted her teeth. She knew what it was like not to be permitted choices. She would not impose the same on Renata.
You always have a choice, at least with me. But thank you. Come this way, please.
She led Renata off busy Nevsky Prospect onto a quiet side street. Vika looked up at the snow drifting from the sky. She issued a silent command, and the snowflakes began to flurry in a protective cylinder around them.
There, she said. Now no one will be able to hear or interrupt us.
Any passers-by would simply see a heavier burst of snowfall. Renata forced a smile, despite not wanting to be there, the learned reaction of a servant, born and bred to be polite.
That's a pretty bracelet you're wearing.
Vika glanced down at where the sleeve of her coat had shifted when she'd conjured the flurry.
Thank you. It's from His Imperial Highness. The Cesarevich?
Renata's eyes widened.
It's supposed to mean I belong to him, to the extent I can ever belong to anyone.
Vika snorted, which actually showed a great deal of restraint, considering that every time she looked at the bracelet, she wanted to punch the Cesarevich and the Grand Princess in their haughty faces. But Renata didn't laugh, either because she was too well-mannered, or because she was too entranced by the gold and the rubies.
Anyway,
Vika said, shaking the sleeve of her coat down to cover the bracelet.
I wanted to say I'm sorry. I should have come to you as soon as the game was done. I was distraught and confused, and it's no excuse, but I'm here now, because I wanted to tell you. You don't need to.
Renata stared again at the icy street beneath her scuffed boots.
I know. I know it's not your fault how the game ended. Nikolai had said from the start that you were more powerful than he, and someone had to die. But I had still hoped he would win, that somehow he'd find a way to defeat you and survive. It was naive of me. I'm sorry, because I know that means I was hoping you would die.
Vika swallowed a dry patch in her throat. But she forced away the hurt of Renata's comment, because if Vika had been in Renata's place, Vika would have hoped the same thing. She shifted her focus and snapped her fingers at the street. A sofa and a table, both made of snow, sprouted from the cobblestones, like mushrooms do from the forest floor.
"Please have a seat,"
she said, as she took the bundle of bread and the box from Renata's arms and led her to one of the chairs.
"Don't worry. The sofa is warm."
Renata gaped.
"Magic, remember?"
"Oh."
Renata nodded slowly and sank into the seat. The snow was fresh, soft powder, and its cushions were airier than goose down. Renata let out a little sound, something between confusion and pleasant surprise. Once she was settled, Vika sat down too.
"I came to you because I need your help."
Renata looked up at her and blinked.
"You see, Nikolai didn't exactly die at the end of the game."
"What?"
Vika had to pause. It was harder retelling this than she'd anticipated.
"He didn't defeat me, but he defeated the game, in a way."
Renata paled.
"Nikolai is alive."
"In a manner of speaking."
I don't understand."
Vika frowned.
"Honestly,
Neither do I.
She took Renata's hand and began to tell her everything she knew, from how the final duel had concluded to the shadow boy who'd appeared. Renata trembled the entire time. The snow flurried a bit more fiercely around them. Renata pulled at her braids.
But if he's a shadow, how do we know he's alive? Can Nikolai touch things, and can he feel them? Does he eat and drink and breathe like a real person? Does he even know who he is?
Vika clutched the snowy armrest.
I don't know. I saw him only once, and that was a week ago. I've tried to find him again since, but haven't been able to. That's why I sought you out. Perhaps your tea leaves will know what's happened to him. The last time I read your leaves, I was wrong.
Renata frowned.
I prophesized that either you or Nikolai would die soon. But if what you're saying is right, then my reading was not, because neither of you died.
Your leaves only predicted that death would come. They didn't say for whom. So they were accurate, actually, because the Tsar and Tsarina passed, as did Sergei.
Vika plucked at the sofa. A thread woven of snowflakes came out between her fingers, but the thread dissolved, seemingly as quickly as Vika was losing those she loved. She looked away from the droplets of water on her fingertips.
I just want to know something, anything about Nikolai. Will you do it?
Renata nodded slowly. She rose as if to fetch tea from the kitchen, but then stopped as she saw the flurry of snow around them.
But, where do we...
Vika held out an open palm, and a single steaming cup of tea appeared on it. It was a simple blue cup and saucer from her own table at home. What if Nikolai did not appear in her leaves? What if their fortunes had crossed only in the past, but were no longer intertwined in the future? If so, then asking Renata to read these leaves would amount to nothing. And yet there were no other prophecies to read, because Nikolai was not around to drink tea and offer his cup. Vika swallowed the tea as quickly as she could. She ignored the fact that it scalded all the way down. When all that remained were spindly leaves, she set the cup on its saucer. Renata steadied the quivering in her hands and leaned forward. She pursed her lips as she studied the leaves, which clung to the inside of the cup with no discernible meaning. At least, nothing discernible to Vika. But that was why she had come to Renata.
Is he in my leaves?
Vika asked. After a few more seconds, Renata leaned back into the sofa. Snow puffed up around her.
Yes, he's there, she said.
Vika smiled. The game might be over, but their story was not. But Renata coughed and wrapped a braid tautly around her finger, and Vika's smile vanished in an instant.
What else is in the leaves? She said.
Renata sighed.
You're fighting over something again. And this time, death isn't a small presence. What do you mean?
Renata released her grip on the braid and pointed to the black tea leaves, twisted and splayed from the bottom up to the rim.
Death is all over this cup. Whatever you're fighting for, it will affect more than just you or Nikolai.
Vika sank deep into the snowy cushions of the sofa. Her heart sank with her.
I don't know what to do,
Renata said as she stared at the cup. Vika sat up.
We have to tell him. What? About the leaves. We didn't last time, and it was a mistake. What if things could have been different if Nikolai had known?
Renata hesitated, but finally nodded.
You should go see him right away.
But now Vika froze, because she hadn't been able to find him in over a week.
Perhaps the problem is me, she thought.
Perhaps he'd appear for Renata, though. After all, he had kissed Renata right before the last duel of the game. Something fluttered inside Vika, something not entirely pretty. It was not butterflies, but more like bats, jealous that Nikolai might be more amenable to seeing Renata than her. After all, Vika had been in his life mere months. Renata had been in Nikolai's life for years. But Vika pressed her palm to her chest and quelled the bats inside.
I may have known Nikolai only a matter of months, but our relationship was far from shallow.
Besides, this was not the time for something as petty as jealousy.
No, it should be you who goes to the step bench,
Vika said, her voice tight.
Nikolai won't show himself for me, but perhaps he will for you.
Renata's eyes lit up at the suggestion.
It's worth a try. Ludmila would tell us to be optimistic, right? She'd say the glass is always half full.
But Vika didn't respond. She merely bit her lip and hoped, but not too much. For when it came to her and Nikolai, optimism was made of warped glass. Chapter 8 The smell of laundry soap floated across the step dream. Nikolai would know that scent anywhere. Renata. He scrambled to his feet from where he lay in the brown grass. He wouldn't hide from her, for he knew Renata was here for him, unlike Vika, who seemed to have come for Pasha's benefit. As soon as Renata saw him, she cried out and ran, alternately tripping in the grass and shoving it away.
Oh, Nikolai, it's true! You're alive!
She opened her arms as if to embrace him, but Nikolai stepped back.
Careful, he said. I'm alive, but I'm not quite solid. You'll fall straight through.
Renata stopped, arms still outstretched.
I don't understand. Nor do I.
He exhaled loudly. Nikolai was accustomed to knowing the answers, and if he didn't, to being able to reason them out. But his current predicament didn't appear to care for logic.
I seem to have some substance, but not much. I am a bit of a conundrum.
Renata smiled.
You always have been.
Nikolai made a small sound under his breath, something akin to laughter, but not quite, and dipped his head to concede the point. Then he stepped forward and wrapped his arms around Renata, loosely, so that his shadow would not blur into her. As soon as he had her against his chest, though, Nikolai relaxed.
Thank goodness you're alive, too.
He hadn't realized until that moment how worried he'd been about Yuliana keeping her promise to release Renata and Ludmila after the conclusion of the game. But here Renata was, whole and streaming tears down her cheeks, and very, very much alive.
You're all right. I'm all right now that I know you're here.
She looked up and smiled, wiping away her tears with her sleeve.
My being a shadow doesn't frighten you?
Nikolai asked. Renata shook her head, and the ends of her braids whipped against her neck.
You're still you. I'm so glad Vika told me you were here.
Vika told you?
Nikolai's voice cracked. He turned slightly away from Renata. How embarrassing to wear his hopes so plainly. She noticed, of course.
Yes, but...
But what?
Renata reached for one of her braids. Nikolai recognized the movement, a tell for when she was nervous. She'd always been the lousiest of the Zakrevsky house servants when it came to lying or hiding things.
Say it,
he said. Her fingers tightened around the braid.
I...
Renata, please.
I think there's something between Vika and Pasha.
Her words came out in such a rush, Nikolai could hardly understand them, and yet he caught the essence of them. His silhouette felt suddenly heavier.
I beg your pardon?
Renata looked everywhere but at Nikolai.
Vika wears a bracelet Pasha gave her, made of rubies and gold. But she said she belonged to him.
As his imperial enchanter, perhaps?
Nikolai...
Renata ran her hand gently down his arm.
We thought you were dead. She had no reason to wait for you. But I haven't been gone very long.
He shook her off and started scratching at the back of his neck.
Damn Pasha!
Renata pressed her lips together.
If it weren't for Pasha demanding the end of the game, none of this would have happened.
Renata shifted away from Nikolai.
The game was going to have to end no matter what. But he didn't have to callously send us off to kill each other, as if our lives meant nothing to him at all. Would you not have made your fifth move if he hadn't? Perhaps I would have let the wands burn.
Nikolai touched his frock coat where his collarbone was.
Perhaps I would have chosen to be incinerated, and then I really would have died.
What little energy Nikolai had seemed to drain away, and he lowered himself onto the ground, resting his head on top of his knees. The grass was so tall, it thrashed in the wind against his face. Renata crouched at his side.
You're upset. You have every right to be.
All the muscles in Nikolai's shadow body tensed, and when he spoke, every word was equally tensed.
Pasha and I were like brothers. Do you know what it's like to have someone you love, someone for whom you would lay down your life, betray you? It's like having my heart scraped out of my chest with one of Galina's caviar spoons, bit by excruciating bit. I wander alone in this step dream, day after day, replaying my friendship with Pasha, and whenever I think of the first time he foolishly stepped into Sanaya Square to play cards with us, or of how it felt when he and I would abandon a hunt to spend hours climbing trees and fishing in streams and laughing about nonsense together, it gouges my heart to pieces all over again. And yet I still miss him,
Nikolai thought. Renata inched closer.
I'm sorry, but the Cesarevich is too. If you could see it for yourself.
Nikolai sighed.
Yes, well, I need to get out of this bench first. You need to rest. No, I need to gather more strength.
Nikolai rose to his feet. It was better anyway to shove away the discomfort of his myriad feelings about Pasha, to bury them deep inside himself, to be dealt with at another time. There was plenty of other suffering from his lifetime crammed into the depths of his heart.
Where are you going?
Renata asked.
To the Yurt village. May I come?
Nikolai looked down at where she still crouched in the grass.
You really want to?
She nodded.
I'd go anywhere with you. I'm a fool for not loving her,
Nikolai thought. Renata had always been there for him, even when he was terrible.
It's just that Vika...
But Nikolai shook himself out of it. There were more important things to think of right now.
Thank you,
he said to Renata.
I have a new idea for getting out of this bench. Come with me to see if it works.
Back in the village portion of the dream, Nikolai explained.
I'm repossessing some of the magic I used to create this scene. I can't seem to get enough energy from the people who visit, so I need to find another source. I thought I might be able to erase some of this dream and absorb the magic I originally used to create it. You're going to take all this away?
Renata looked at the villagers, who were gathering around the fire for dinner. She smiled sadly.
They're illusions, Nikolai said. Don't lament their demise.
He focused on the horizon, where the sheep were led each day to graze. That part of the dream began to shimmer, as when heat hazes the skyline, and then the scene seemed to dissolve slowly. Nikolai gasped as the fields vanished for good, and the magic that had once created it found its way back into his body, like liquid sunshine trickling into his veins. Only a blur of nondescript summer color, yellow and green and blue, marked the new border of the steppe dream where the fields had once been. The children watering the sheep were the next to go. One, two, three of them vanished mid-step. The men relaxing by the fire went next, disappearing as if evaporating. With each subtraction from the scene, a tiny burst of energy flared within Nikolai. He erased the women preparing dinner. For a few seconds, a knife continued slicing onions. Then Nikolai absorbed that image, and the rice pilaf, too. Renata blinked at where they'd all been a moment ago, mouth slightly open. He watched her. He'd forgotten the glow that shone about Renata whenever she saw him conjure, or in this case vanish, something new. Her awe was its own kind of magic. After watching her a second more, Nikolai began to wash away the yurts. They faded slowly away, like watercolors diluted too much. All the while, his body temperature rose. Oh, he hadn't realized it before, but he hadn't been hot or cold or anything in between since the end of the game. In anti-death, it seemed, certain sensations were suspended. But now I can feel warmth again. All that remained of the steppe dream was where Nikolai and Renata stood, the grassland and the mountains in the distance.
I feel more alive than I have in... Wait, how long has it been?
A fortnight since the end of the game.
Nikolai frowned. It seemed both much longer and shorter than that. The passage of time must also be something that got lost in anti-death, especially when paired with an endless dream. Still, he felt more himself now than in the past 2 weeks. Nikolai reached up out of habit to adjust his top hat. His arm passed in front of his face. His arm, no, all of him, remained entirely shadow.
No.
What is it?
Renata asked.
It can't be.
Nikolai checked his other arm and his legs and his torso. Black and grey, here but not here, real but entirely imaginary.
It was supposed to work. Why aren't I solid again?
Renata sighed. She cut it short, but not before Nikolai heard.
Maybe you'll be visible when you're no longer in the dream,
she said hastily, as if to make up for letting her disappointment slip.
You just need to leave this place first. Come with me. Let's try.
Nikolai clawed at his sleeve. It didn't even feel like wool. Not really. Just air. Slightly soft, black air. His pulse raced inside his shadow heart. And who even knew if that pulse existed or not?
Nikolai.
Renata pried his fingers off his sleeve and squeezed them with her own, although she did so lightly and did not close her hand all the way. It worked, and her fingers didn't pass straight through his, but rather rested around where his shadow was, like she was holding on to nothing.
I am nothing.
Nikolai couldn't move.
Wake up with me,
she said with more force in her voice than usual, as if she knew where his thoughts were taking him. But of course she knew. Renata knew him almost as well as he knew himself.
Breathe,
she said,
and let's pull ourselves away from here.
All right, breathe. I can do that.
Nikolai inhaled.
Again,
Renata said. He took another, deeper breath. Then he squeezed Renata's hand gently, and she must have felt at least some pressure from his touch, because she smiled. It was a small measure of comfort, knowing that he did, in fact, exist. Renata shook her head to jostle the dream out of her mind. Within moments, she began to fade. But Nikolai remained rooted in the step. Renata frowned.
I'll be back in a minute,
she said, her voice already distant, halfway back to reality.
I'll wake, then fall back asleep to return.
Don't,
Nikolai said. He dropped her nearly transparent hand from his.
But...
No, leave me. I want to be alone.
Renata's mouth opened as if to say something, but no words came out, possibly because her ability to speak had already returned to the other side of the bench. But more likely, because she didn't actually say a thing. For when she had disappeared completely, she did not return. Nikolai looked at the empty space where she'd been.
Thank you, he said.
He had truly meant it when he said he wanted to be alone, and Renata had understood that. He walked a few paces in the direction of the mountain, the only thing left besides the grass here on this illusory step. Then Nikolai fell to his knees and bowed forward, until his head pressed against the dirt. His hat tumbled off. A single despondent sob racked his shadowed body. The long grass cut tiny scratches in his skin as the wind whipped the blades at his face. He was not whole, and yet he could still be wounded. And the barrenness of the plains stretched into an empty, blurred horizon, promising an eternity of loneliness and confinement and misery.
"I'll find another way," Nikolai said. "Because devil take me, I cannot stay here."
Chapter 9. At the same time, Pasha was walking through the center of the ballroom, where Vika's Kazakh dome had been set up behind locked doors, so the palace servants wouldn't stumble upon the magical scene. He shook his head as he and his sister, Yuliana, wove in and out of the marketplace stalls for the umpteenth time this morning, listening to the conversations for any hint about a threatened rebellion against the Russians.
"There's nothing in here about Gassim or his revolt," Pasha said.
Yuliana crossed her arms and kicked the edge of the dome.
"Vika didn't do her job." "Actually, she did what we asked of her, only you're frustrated it didn't turn out as you'd hoped."
Pasha winked, a small dose of teasing to ease the truth.
"Perhaps there's no information because there's nothing happening in that part of the empire right now. Have you considered that you might be looking for trouble where it doesn't exist?"
"Looking for trouble where it supposedly doesn't exist is precisely what a good Tsar needs to do. If you see it only when it's obvious, then it's already too late."
Pasha's stomach plummeted, and he stopped mid-stride, next to a vendor selling silver earrings. Here it was again. The truth that he was not ready or fit to be Tsar, that his sister was the one really keeping the empire afloat. Pasha's major accomplishments for the day only included shaving, finally, and turning up in this ballroom when he was supposed to. Yuliana cut across the dome to his side.
"Mon frère, I didn't mean to imply..."
Pasha held up a hand.
"It's fine. You spoke the truth."
"It's a particular flaw of mine."
"No, it's a relief to know you'll tell me what's real, rather than kowtowing at my feet like everyone else in this palace. It's a relief someone capable will be by my side to care for the empire."
"You're more than capable," Yuliana said. "You have remarkable instincts about people. I'm good with hard facts and figures. We simply have different strengths."
She stood on her toes and pecked Pasha on the cheek.
"Do you think so?"
he asked.
"I know so,"
she smiled, which she did so rarely that it made the gesture worth all the more. Pasha's stomach settled, mostly.
"On that note," he said, "I actually have another meeting to attend."
Yuliana quirked a brow.
"With whom?"
"Major General Volkonsky. He requested an audience."
"Do you?"
"No, I can handle it,"
Pasha said, for he already knew what his sister was about to offer.
"Besides, it will give you more time to go through this dome at your leisure."
Yuliana looked around the Kazakh marketplace, which had restarted itself from the beginning of the scene Vika captured. The conversations were commencing again, like actors rehearsing from the top of a play. There really was nothing here,
but Yuliana won't let it go until she's been through it a dozen times more,
Pasha thought. He knew his sister well, just as Yuliana knew him. She nodded, agreeing to let him see Volkonsky on his own, because she understood that this was something Pasha needed to do to prove his capability to himself. He gave her a cursory smile, although he was sure she could see his anxiety, only thinly veiled, and hurried out of the ballroom.
"His Imperial Highness, the Cesarevich Pavel Alexandrovich Romanov,"
the young guard Ilya announced as Pasha arrived in the throne room. Volkonsky was already there, standing at attention. He was only 37, but his military experience and fame gave him the gravitas of someone much older. His brown hair was neatly combed, his sideburns fashionably long yet tidy, and his dark blue uniform was perfectly pressed. Medals clinked against one another on his chest as he bowed. Pasha ascended the dais and sat on the throne. The velvet cushion beneath him was plush, but the gold armrests, sculpted as screaming eagles, were cold, even through his gloves. He tried not to look too uncomfortable.
"Please rise, Major General," Pasha said.
Volkonsky stood upright.
"Thank you for agreeing to see me, Your Imperial Highness."
"It's an honor to have you in my court," Pasha said.
The Major General was one of the most admired noblemen in Russia, and the Volkonskys were a dynasty descended from 14th century nobility.
"What can I do for you?"
"My men and I are looking forward to your upcoming coronation, and it is because of the changing of the throne that I've come today. I would like to propose that you reconsider your father's policies regarding serfdom."
Pasha tilted his head to indicate that he was listening. Volkonsky nodded and continued.
"Serfdom is essentially indentured servitude. England stopped the backward practice centuries ago, but here we are in 1825, still forcing peasants to work with no prospect of freedom. I fought side by side with noblemen and serfs alike, and we are, at our core, the same. Serfs are men, passionate Russians, and they are as much responsible for the defeat of Napoleon and the continued greatness of our empire as I am. So why, in times of peace, do we not accord them the same respect?"
Pasha clutched the screaming eagle armrests of the throne as he tried to get comfortable with being in charge. But then he reminded himself that his father had lectured him on the issue of serfdom. It was not a subject that Pasha knew nothing about.
"I sympathize with your compassion, Major General, but the solution cannot be as simple as abolishing serfdom. It's an issue that my father studied, and it is incredibly complex. Where would the serfs live, and how would they provide for their families, were they given their freedom from the nobles they serve? They would not be able to afford to rent the land they work, and therefore would not be able to generate enough income to feed their families and pay for the roofs above their heads. And there are so many more complications."
"So you mean to do nothing?"
Volkonsky asked. Pasha frowned. It wasn't that he wouldn't attempt to make changes, but he couldn't commit to anything because he knew there was more to this conversation than was being left unsaid. The Imperial Council had warned the late Tsar that some of the aristocracy returning from the Napoleonic Wars had, despite fighting for Russia, been seduced by the democratic philosophies of the West. They didn't like Russia's autocracy, and abolishing serfdom was only one of their requests. They wanted to get rid of the monarchy entirely. Pasha ran his hand through his hair. He couldn't help it, as unroyal as it may have seemed.
"How does this fit in with what men like Pavel Pestel have advocated, namely revolution and assassinating the Tsar?"
Volkonsky bowed his head.
"I swear on my honor that I do not subscribe to Pestel's radical solutions, Your Imperial Highness. If anything, I am partial to the idea of a constitutional monarchy. We would work together with you as the Tsar, not against."
Pasha didn't even need Yuliana here to know that was a lie. A constitutional monarchy would make the Tsar all but a figurehead. Of course, that was preferable to Pestel's desire to have Pasha dead.
"I will consider carefully every possible path for the future of our people and our empire,"
Pasha said as he straightened on the throne, trying his best to respond the way his father would have.
"But I ask that, as someone with long-standing ties to the Imperial family, Major General, you convince those who share your views to be patient and give me time. Let me be clear, however, that there will be no constitution. The Tsar is the Tsar."
Volkonsky stiffened. Then he dipped his head.
Of course, Your Imperial Highness. I am, as always, at your service.
Pasha nodded and dismissed him. His guard Ilya showed Volkonsky out of the throne room. When Ilya returned, Pasha beckoned him.
You're the best of my men at tracking people, Pasha said,
for Ilya was the only one of his guard who had any sense of where Pasha was, approximately a quarter of the time, when he snuck out of the palace. The rest of the guard were helpless in the face of Pasha's knowledge of secret passageways and disguises.
Whenever you're not on duty here with me, will you keep an eye on Volkonsky for me? Report to me anything he does that is contrary to the Tsardom, and don't let anyone else know I've asked this of you.
It was the best Pasha could think to do, strategically. Act like Yuliana. But he had to force himself not to squirm in his throne, for acting like his sister was uncomfortable, to say the least. Ilya hesitated for a second, probably because it was no small task to spy on a man like Volkonsky. But then he saluted.
Yes, of course, Your Imperial Highness. I'll tell you everything you need to know.
When Ilya was gone, Pasha jammed his hands back into his hair. He hoped he'd done all right with this meeting, because for once, he'd wanted to attempt something like this on his own. Perhaps all the constitutionalists needed was the sense that the Crown was listening and would work on improving things. There had been too much stubbornness and enmity between the Tsardom and the constitutionalists in the past. Pasha might never have been good at strategy and war, but he was, as Yuliana had pointed out, adept at understanding and charming people to his side, at persuasion and compromise.
I hope Yuliana is right, he thought, because I'm not just training to be Tsar anymore. I actually will be Tsar soon. And I can't muck this up.
Chapter 10 Aijana looked down at her son, asleep in the grass and dirt. She'd once curled in despair like that too, when she had been abandoned by her lover, left unwed and pregnant, utterly ruined. But this was Nikolai, and though she hadn't known him for long, she had observed him enough to recognize that this was not like her son. Was the weight of the game and anti-death finally too much for him to bear? It was a great deal to handle, even for a boy as strong as he. And yet, ironically, this sad turn of events, Nikolai's inability to save himself, could be the opportunity Aijana was waiting for.
He needs me now, she thought.
Aijana lowered herself gently to his side. She smiled and brushed a lock of hair out of his face. Even as a shadow, his features were elegant and refined.
What a beautiful boy you are, she whispered.
His principles held him back, made him think it was wrong to murder for his own gain. But he shouldn't have to be relegated to existence in a dream. Nikolai deserved more. He could be Tsar.
I have energy to spare, and no qualms about obtaining more.
Aijana watched her sleeping son. Sometimes the young did not know what was best for them, but that was what mothers were for. Aijana lifted her hand and placed it on the back of Nikolai's neck. She was careful not to scratch him with her brittle nails. He stirred but did not wake.
Good. Sleep, and soon you will feel stronger, better.
Aijana closed her eyes too. But she did not rest. Instead, she felt the current of energy inside herself, some of it grey like the beetles and maggots she'd siphoned it from, and some of it black from the people she'd killed to obtain it, for she'd slaughtered them out of anger and vengeance. Her methods stained the energy with their darkness.
Just a little bit of my energy to sustain him,
she thought.
He won't even notice.
She smiled.
I'm doing what a mother ought to do.
Then she sent a trickle of energy from her own body, through her fingertips, toward Nikolai. His shoulders tensed around his neck where she touched him. There was opposition, and Dijana's energy pulled at her fingers like a funnel that had been stopped.
"Shh,"
she said.
"It's all right, my darling. It's only a little, until you get more of your own."
Nikolai's shoulders remained taut for another moment, and then the tension released, as if the muscles, like the rest of him, were too fatigued to fight back. The grey-black energy in her fingers burbled as Nikolai's resistance disappeared, and it dribbled into him like a liquid parasite, pleased to find a new host.
"There is too much of St. Petersburg and its rules about honor in you,"
Aijana said.
"But this is good, for my energy will give you more of my spirit, my fight. You should be Tsar, my son. Pasha sent you to your death and tried to take away all that mattered to you. Your magic and the girl you love."
Thinking of the wrongs heaped onto Nikolai roused her. She abandoned her plan to share only a little energy, and instead sent a surge of her black power into his veins.
"I'm giving you this energy so you can be strong, but also because I hope you will see that I am right, that you will exact revenge, just as I did with your father,"
Aijana said.
"Take from Pasha what matters most, and make him suffer while you do it. That is the Karimov way."
She shot her appetite for vengeance into Nikolai, straight to his heart. He took in a pained breath and reached in his sleep for the back of his neck. Aijana jerked her hand away. Nikolai rubbed his skin where her fingers had just been. Then he sighed, contentedly, Aijana liked to think, and let his hand drop back to the grass. She smiled her broken-toothed grin. It was gruesome, and yet laced with affection. The kind of twisted smile only a mother could give.
"You see, my son, I can tell you feel better already."
Chapter 11. That evening, Vika dreamed of being on Letney Isle again, at Candlestick Point at the end of the game. Nikolai stood before her, pacing. He twirled in his black-gloved hand the dagger that his mentor, Galina, had gifted him.
"I've never wanted anyone but you," Nikolai said.
Vika felt herself tugged forward, closer to him, by the invisible string between them. And yet he continued to spin the dagger.
"Then what is the knife for?"
she asked.
"To end the game."
Nikolai tightened his hold on the handle. The sun reflected viciously off the blade.
"You love me, so you're going to kill me?"
He smiled reluctantly. The corners of his mouth weighted with regret, then shrugged.
"Yes."
She tried to throw up a shield to protect herself, but the enchantment would not appear. She couldn't even feel the magic in her fingertips. Another hitch in Bolshevnoi Duplo's power. Vika frowned. This was not how it had happened at the end of the actual game. But it didn't matter, for this alternate version barreled along regardless of accuracy, and Nikolai strode up to her, embraced her, and slammed the dagger into her heart, hilt to her chest, and blade protruding out through her back. She cried out and collapsed into his arms.
"I didn't intend for it to turn out this way,"
he whispered, even as she felt her life and her magic bleeding onto his coat, soaking into the wool, seeping into his skin. Vika gasped, but not only from the physical pain. She also realized Nikolai was extracting the magic from her on purpose.
"Then why?"
Vika managed. Nikolai paused and looked at her. His eyes, though always black, were now bottomless, like a chasm too deep for the sunlight to penetrate. A moment later, he turned away and resumed taking her energy.
"Because this magic never belonged only to you," he said.
"Nor to you,"
She sacked father into his arms.
It's meant for us together.
Nikolai frowned but nodded. Then he jerked the blade from her body and stabbed himself too.
Us together.
Vika gasped and startled awake. Chapter 12. Nikolai groaned as he woke up in the step dream. His neck was stiff, damn it, probably from falling asleep, curled up on the hard-packed dirt. And it was dark now, with no moon in the black sky, the very limited sky, since he'd gotten rid of the majority of the dream. He groaned again. But then he stretched his limbs, and they weren't creaky like his neck was. Rather, they felt almost normal again. Nikolai conjured a lantern so he could examine his body in the dark. He held his breath as the light flickered across his arm, and he let out all the air in a single puff, because he was still composed of shadow. But, nevertheless, something was different. It wasn't warm, as his energy usually felt, but it was some kind of strength, dark, like his shadow form, and a bit cold, like a trickle of ice water in his veins. How strange. He furrowed his brow. What was it? And yet the feeling was not unwelcome. Nikolai climbed carefully to his feet, brushing off the bits of grass that clung to him. He pulled his shoulders back and rotated them several times, shook out his hands, twisted from side to side. Yes, he was definitely stronger than he'd been a few hours before. Perhaps all he'd needed was sleep, and some time for his past magic, that which he'd repurposed from the dream, to reinvigorate him. But was it enough? It had better be. He didn't want to think about what it meant if it was not. Shh, he said to the uncertainty trembling inside him. When it stilled, Nikolai tried to imagine waking, to stir himself from the dream. He yawned. He stretched. He shook his body in inelegant ways that would have embarrassed him had anyone else seen. But nothing changed. He remained firmly surrounded by the step. The golden eagle landed beside the lantern and cocked its head at him.
Come on, damn it!
Nikolai rubbed at the back of his stiff neck. Using magic had always been second nature to him. It had always been there whenever he needed it. But it was as if magic had forgotten him now that he'd lost the game, lost his body, lost his grip on reality. Or was it that he had forgotten magic? Nikolai concentrated on the memory of it. When he was a small child and just discovering his abilities, he'd delighted not only in the tricks he could play on the other village children, but also in the sensation of magic itself.
Yes, Nikolai thought. That's what I need, to recall the feel of it.
That silken quality of its ebb and flow, the heat of its power, the subtlety of its butterfly kiss. He remembered how magic could buoy him like a rising tide, and how it could wash over him like a crashing wave. He was not only a shadow, but a shell without it. The longing for that missing, essential piece of him ached as badly as the game's scar had once seared. That was not the only feeling that haunted him, though. For some reason, there was also an echo of Aijana's voice, her exhortation from the last time he saw her in this dream.
The so-called Cesarevich should not be the one to ascend to the throne.
Because Nikolai was first in line. He shook his head, trying to jostle away the thought. Thinking about Pasha risked opening Nikolai's most unbearable memories and emotions, for his heart contained a roiling cauldron of sadness and injustice and anger, and if he did not keep the lid secure, the pot would boil over. When he was younger, Nikolai hadn't known how to keep his feelings in check. He'd been mistreated as a child on the steppe, and then grown up under Galina's tyrannical rule. He used to hurl daggers through projects of his that failed, and he would sometimes sew his own mouth shut. Magically, of course. Real needle and thread would hurt too much. When he was upset, but wanted to keep inside what he felt were inappropriate sentiments. But as he grew older, Nikolai figured out how to bury his past under gentility and grace, even though it was still there, just beneath the surface. Now, however, he gasped as iciness spread inside him, like spindly tentacles, reaching for that secret cauldron in the depths of his heart.
"No!"
he said. But he was powerless to fight it, for that very energy was the only energy of substance that Nikolai had, and all he could do was double over in horror as it lifted the lid on everything he didn't want to feel. Nikolai tallied his brother's wrongs in his head. Pasha's betrayal, the apology that meant nothing because it had come too late, come at a memorial service after Pasha thought Nikolai was already dead, and the fact that Pasha could continue to live his gilded life with Vika by his side, while Nikolai was stuck in anti-death as a shadow. Had that been Pasha's hope all along, that by forcing the end of the game, Vika would prevail? She'd been the stronger of the two enchanters, and with Nikolai out of the way, Pasha would be able to swoop in on Vika, taking advantage of her grief.
"Damn you, Pasha! Damn you to the ninth circle of hell!"
Nikolai shivered, but the chill simultaneously steeled his muscles. And then a new idea pushed its way forth, growing quickly, like fractals of ice on a frozen windowpane. If he escaped from this dream, this nightmare, he could make Pasha suffer. He could claim the crown for himself. But a spark of light within Nikolai pushed back.
"I once loved Pasha, and he loved me."
And yet men declared duels for insults far less than what Pasha had committed. So why shouldn't he suffer consequences for his actions? Dante's ninth circle was too good for a traitor like him.
"I deserve to be Tsar as much as Pasha does."
And as the idea of wearing the crown settled into Nikolai's mind, there it was. Magic, like a cold flame flickering inside him. He seized it and felt it swell.
Yes!
Magic had not forsaken him. It had not abandoned him because he'd lost the game. His golden eagle landed beside him in the grass and nodded at him.
"You're right," Nikolai said. "I need to go."
He did not take in his surroundings one last time. He did not bid them farewell, for if he never saw this step dream again, it would be too soon.
"Wake me up,"
Nikolai whispered. The stars above him blurred, like specks of salt dissolving into the imaginary night. The scent of grass was replaced by the smell of maple candy and oak. He was still a shadow, but it didn't matter. He was sitting on a bench on an island in the middle of the Nyavar. Sitting, firmly rooted, in reality. Chapter 13. As night settled in, a sparrow pecked at Pasha's antechamber window at the Winter Palace. Pasha frowned from where he sat in his armchair.
"What is this?"
he said as he rose and crossed the room. He slid the window open, and a gust of snow blew in. The bird darted in as well. It flew so fast, it nearly clipped Pasha across the nose.
"Zut alors!"
he jerked out of the way. The sparrow careened across the antechamber and smashed itself into the opposite wall. The bird shattered on impact, and Pasha cried out again. But it wasn't a live bird at all. It was made of stone. Shards of sharp grey rock rained down onto the burgundy rug. A small rolled sheet of paper tied with a black ribbon lay in the bird's remains. Pasha walked slowly across the rug to retrieve it. He brushed away the rock dust and untied the ribbon. The paper leaped from his hand and flew into the air, unrolling itself in the process. It floated directly at eye level so Pasha could read.
"Meet me at the statue of Peter the Great at midnight."
The handwriting was ornately elegant, yet as precise as a British timepiece. Pasha staggered and braced himself against the wall. He inadvertently crushed the letter in his hand. It was from Nikolai. Pasha's knees gave out, and he crumbled to the rug like rock dust.
"Nikolai,
is alive.
Chapter 14. Fika lay in bed, a dream about Nikolai hovering